tweet at Today SOR.
Text just in, Sean, do you realise how lucky you are to have such magical music surrounding you there so often, and especially today? That's a question posed by Bob. Bob, I most certainly do, and thank you for texting. 51551 for your text. Still perhaps a little time left to get in a question or two to Pat Whelan, Master Butcher. We're going to talk, literally, as I said, we're going to talk turkey now, because as we know, on Christmas Day, the centrepiece on lots of tables will be a fine, big roast turkey with all the trimmings. But if you don't have large groups of people, maybe a full turkey can be a bit daunting, and there's only so much turkey and turkey curry that you can face in the days after Christmas. So Master Butcher Pat Whelan of James Whelan Butchers can tell us about what can be done, maybe to, I suppose, spread the opportunities, Pat. Like you say start with a turkey breast.
Yeah, you know, lots of people, well, you know, traditionally turkey was something that we had at Christmas. Now turkey is something that we have every day of the week. So I think people have become more used to turkey as a meat. And there are portion sizes. If you look at turkey breast, you can portion it for two, you can portion it for six or for eight. It's a very versatile meat in that way. But I think there's something atmospheric about having that bird on the table on Christmas Day. It kind of states the day that's in it, and it lingers in the house for those days afterwards.
Oh, and there's the whole ceremonial about getting it ready.
Absolutely,
and
where you store it and collecting it and ordering it. And there's almost ceremony on the whole process, which is something to be celebrated.
Pat, I gather you are a fan of brining. Tell me about that, and is it a hard thing to do?
Well, brining is an idea that's an American idea originally, and it's basically where you add moisture to the turkey. So it's a salt solution that you can add herbs. You basically immerse it in water and add herbs to it, leave it for 24 hours, and the meat naturally takes on the moisture. Just removing it then the following day, drying it and cooking it, and it renders the breast that bit more moist.
Okay, and you'd need to keep it in somewhere cool, obviously, like the fridge or...
A pantry or a keep or somewhere cool in the garage. Immersing it in ice cold water will preserve it in that way, and the salt solution will preserve it. So
now, when you say salt solution, you mean shake a big half a thing of salt that you... Well, like the ordinary table salt or what?
Yeah, ordinary table salt into cold ice cold water. Cubes of ice will help the temperature of the water keep it down. But it's not a large amount of salt. About 5% salt would go into it.
Okay, now some advice then on roasting the turkey. Again, you're a believer in doing things a little bit upside down.
Yeah, when you start to think about turkey and how it sits in the oven, the breast is what we all love. And sometimes if you start to think about it, if you actually reverse the process and cook it upside down, all of the natural juices will flow towards the breast. And that has a benefit in the overall moisture and the texture of the meat. What you need to be really, really careful with is when you're actually lifting it out of the tray after cooking it upside down, that it actually doesn't fall apart, because it's the weakest part you're picking. And what you need is two good meat forks to actually take it from the tray. But it's a very interesting way of cooking it.
Yeah, but what about the idea, though, that people have of putting streaky bacon? And a lot of people maybe like, it's one of the things they like most, but it's the pre-dinner ritual. Who gets to have those? I mean, do you still need to put on the streaky bacon?
Well, you can actually put them on the back, in the same way, and it'll still give you that crispy effect of the bacon. You know, it's all about developing flavour in different ways.
Now, to come back to just maybe if people have smaller numbers, some advice on roasting the joints separately. I mean, this might appeal to people who like their brown meat, for instance.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the trick around this is, an investment around this is a small thermometer, because everyone fears the turkey being dry and going for that extra gravy to try and moisten it. And smaller joints can cook quicker, and people don't cook it often enough, so they've forgotten from time to time. But if you have invested in a small thermometer, which is inexpensive to buy, 75 degrees core temperature, and you're absolutely perfect. What's really, really important also is when you take the roast out of the oven is to rest it and allow the juices to, I suppose, settle and the flavour develops before cutting it. So I would be a big advocate of resting any roast up to 20 minutes before
But I'm sure, like, butchers must be the last thing they will want to see is people coming looking for them to, you know, sort of to is it dejoint the turkey or to chop it up for them?
I think butchering is one of those great trades that's built around two great things, which is quality and service. And one of the things that the advantage of dealing with a butcher is that service piece. So, butchers have the knowledge and the skill to do whatever it is you'd like to do.
And they won't mind too much, or they'll put a smile on their face, a seasonal smile, if you say, look, you know, give me just a single turkey leg and you want it deboned and de-sinewed.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, if you look at the relationship with the butcher will look at his customer on the lifetime value of that relationship. So whatever it is on whatever day, quality and service is what the industry is built around.
Right. And then we have some queries. I want to leave tradition this year aside and to cook a piece of roast beef. Slices of medium rare beef is what I'd like. Can Pat tell me what cut to ask my butcher for? That's a bit unseasonal, but there you go.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, if you think about it, Irish beef and Irish people, we're quite aligned. There are over 100,000 small beef farmers in Ireland. So, you know, it's natural that people would naturally go for beef. In the business, we have introduced just recently a salt-aged beef, which is aged in a Himalayan salt chamber for 35 days with our good friend Peter Hannan. And this beef, because of the displacement of moisture, renders an absolutely beautiful beefy flavour. So if you're roasting something really special, that's something to look for.
And just as a guideline, you allow what, 15 minutes per pound? Is that for the turkey? It's probably for both, actually.
Probably, yeah. But I can't stress enough the cooking with the core temperature. It makes people heroes in kitchens, because once you hit the core temperature of 75 degrees for perfect cooking of a turkey, you just remove it and that's it. There's no guessing anymore. There's no waiting for the juices to run clear. It's science.
And where do you place the thermometer though to get
in
that?
The deepest part of the meat, and be careful not to touch the bone.
Okay, because that will mislead you.
It will give an incorrect reading. So into the deepest part of the flesh, and once you've achieved that magical temperature, whether it's in beef, whether you're looking for medium or rare, you can adjust the thermometer for that.
Yeah, and again, a listener wondering, what do you think of boned and rolled turkey, the whole thing boned and rolled?
I think it's really convenient and it's great for slicing. But for me personally, I love the atmosphere, as I said, of the bird on the bone, because it has a place in the kitchen at that time of the year.
And going back, by the way, to the roasting a turkey upside down, do you still have to do basting and all that kind of thing if you go with that route?
Obviously, everything you do helps. Everything you do helps. So basting is a natural thing to do, to pour the natural juices over the product, over the bird in the oven, and create that moisture. And that's ultimately developing the flavour, natural flavour that exists in the bird. So every little thing that you can do to enhance that always helps.
And what about covering it? I mean, I have a particular preference for, say, cooking it in the bag.
And a lot of people do. And again, you're keeping that moisture around it. Other people will want to develop the skin to be crispy. So mm-hmm. People leave it in at a high heat, reduce the heat and cover it once they have that effect achieved. So, you know, there's lots of different methods and lots of different ways. It's a personal preference.
Have you any advice on making a turkey gravy?
I suppose, you know, it's the reduction of the juices. Some people will add a certain amount of sweetness to it. Root vegetables can be added to it, like you'd make a beef gravy. It's all about the quality of the juice, which starts with the quality of the turkey.
Yeah, and so you have that idea of just getting all the things right, just a mixture of, and the business of separating though the grease from the juices is another thing that, you know, some people find a bit messy.
Yeah, I think, you know, my advice to anyone around Christmas is to keep it very simple. Season the meat simply with salt and pepper, mm-hmm. A bit of garlic, something quite simple, and then to keep the process quite simple, because we're making gravy, you know, a lot during the year. Turkey gravy is no different to any other gravy, except you're using the juices from the meat. So use the same principles of what we do, either straining it or whatever other methods you do to reduce it.
Here's another one. Now, this is something I've seen in the past and tried it once or twice as well. I steep a muslin cloth in butter and cover the bird. No need to baste, and it turns out perfectly.
Absolutely. There are several different methods, and that's akin to the brining method where you're adding moisture. The butter is obviously adding its own magic and flavour to it also.
You won't be using the muslin cloth for anything else again, I suspect.
I'd say not.
And then, of course, the idea of covering it in tinfoil. Again, how long do you need to do that for? Do you take it off the last hour or something like
that? Well, as I said, you know, when you put it in first, a lot of people leave it uncovered just to develop that nice colour on it.
Yes.
And once you've developed that crispy colour, a lot of people would cover it. What's really, really important is when you take it out, is to cover it with foil, just loosely covering it with foil to maintain the temperature, but give it enough time to rest. And from a carving point of view, once the meat settles, it's much, much easier to carve.
What about a word? We need a word for the ham. what's your approach to doing the ham? Because again, some people will cook it the day before and reheat.
A lot of people do. I always bake it in the oven, low and slow. So I put it in for about 4 hours, covered, and then take it out and put it back in for another hour, uncovered.
So you wouldn't bother parboiling it at all?
I never do. I suppose it comes back to we do it the day before, like a lot of people would, and it keeps the rings of the cooker free, and the oven isn't being used that day before, so it's a great use of space at that time.
And you can still get it hot by putting it back in for another hour?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Pat, thank you so much indeed for coming in. That's Pat Whelan there of
thank
James
you,
Whelan Butchers.